Judge Alarcon, before World War II, did you have a sense you wanted a career in the law, or did that come later?
When I was 6 months old, my parents separated, and I was taken to El Paso, Texas, where I was raised by my grandmother till I was 5 years old. She did not speak English, so my first language until I was 5 years old was Spanish. I learned to speak English after my father remarried and brought me to Los Angeles, and I was taught to speak English by the children in my kindergarten class. One of the reasons that I am a judge and decided to become a lawyer is because my father, who only had 1 year of education in a remote part of Chihuahua, Mexico, told me when I was still literally in my crib, "You really ought to think about going to law school when you grow up, because you can practice law, or you can run for office, or you can go into business and use what you've learned in law school for that purpose." Ever since I was a small child, I thought that was a terrific idea, so I always wanted to be a lawyer.
Tell me about your enlistment in the Army.
When I was 17 and a senior in high school, I was still hoping someday to be able to afford to go to law school, but really didn't have yet the funds to do so. The Department of Defense announced a program that they were going to give tests in the high schools throughout the United States. The students who scored high enough on those tests, if they enlisted in the military, they would be given a very brief specialized training. They would then go off to an accelerated undergraduate program, and then after that, after we got our degree under the military, we would then become officers, lieutenants, and then be ready to occupy Japan and Germany after the war ended. I thought that would be a terrific way for me to get my undergraduate work done, at least. So I signed up for that test, and I passed the test. So I was assigned to go to Pomona College, which was only 20 miles from my high school. Well, when we marched to the station, the general had us sit down and said, "There's been a change in our orders. The Army infantry has had great losses in North Africa, and so the Army Specialized Training Program has been abolished, and you are all going into the infantry."
What were you thinking at that moment?
First of all, I was, of course, disappointed that I wasn't going off to college. On the other hand, because I was 18 and 3 months, I thought it might be exciting to go off and fight in the war and be in the infantry and work my way up through the ranks in the infantry.
Please give me an overview, if you can, of your military service in Europe.
I was involved with my company in four different battles, one of which was the Battle of the Bulge. And for each major battle, infantrymen were awarded a battle star. So that's where I have four battle stars on my European ribbon to show that I was in four different battles. There was one south of that in what was called Hürtgen Forest. There was another battle as we crossed the Rhine, and then there was a fourth battle in northern Germany, where there was major forces on both sides, and fortunately we won all four battles.
Can you describe your duties as a scout and a sniper?
I came
Sure.
from Los Angeles, and I had never even had a BB gun before I went into the military. So when I went to the rifle range to be trained, to my total surprise and the gunnery sergeant's surprise, I ended up having the best score on the rifle range, to the extent that they asked me to go to sniper school. So I had the top score in a sniper school, which meant that I was named the sniper for my company. I later found out that, when I was instructed, they said, "Now, what a sniper does is you go forward before your fellow soldiers until you come into contact with the enemy." I later found out that that meant bullets whistling over your ears. They also said, "And in addition to that, if we have to move," and the Army never talked about retreat, "but if we have to change positions, the sniper stays behind to protect the troops that are changing positions." So it was kind of an exciting responsibility both ways.
Was any combat experience most dangerous or most memorable?
We were in a snow-covered valley near Trieste in Germany, and the Germans were on the other side, And my company commander said, okay, go forward through this valley until you come into contact with the enemy. And I said, Captain, if you have me go down the center of this valley, see those two mountains on each side of this valley, if I were the Germans, I'd have a machine gun there. And he said, that was a direct order. So I moved forward, and sure enough, two machine guns, one from each little peak, started firing at me. And the thing that was fascinating is, of course, I started running, and I looked ahead, and there was a depression in the snow that looked to be about 3 feet deep. And I decided I'm going to run and jump into that, so I'll be below the machine gun fire. As I ran towards it, and my legs were scissoring, I could see bullets that were being shot, and I saw several of them go between my legs as I ran. So I thought, this is rather serious. So I jumped into this thing, and when I jumped through the snow, there was ice under the snow, and I cracked through the ice, and it was full of water that was near freezing. And so during daylight for the rest of that day, the machine gunners kept shooting, and I couldn't get out of there because I raised my helmet, and the bullets came flying on both sides of my helmet. So I ended up with my legs frozen. When it got dark, I was able to run back to where my company was, and they rubbed my legs all night. And the next morning, they put me on an ambulance, and I was driven to Luxembourg, where there was a hospital that dealt with people who had frozen limbs. And many of the people who went to that hospital lost their legs. I had an unusual doctor, a young doctor. When I was brought in, he said, you know, I'd rather not do what I've been having to do with other people with you. I want to try an experiment. And I said, you're talking about avoiding amputation? He said, yes. I said, terrific. Go for it. And he said, first of all, I'm going to put you near the window so that your body temperature doesn't change too fast. And I'm going to open it. Secondly, he said, do you drink? And I said, no. And he said, well, you're going to get an ounce of bourbon for the next 12 hours because I want to try stimulating your body temperature from within. Well, now, I don't know if that was scientifically correct, but I'm sitting here with both of my legs.
Judge Alarcon, how were you changed by your war experience?
And one of the things that I learned, for example, the notion I got of really respecting soldiers in uniform who were defending their own country, I think that's been a life experience, to try to judge other people, understand why they're doing what they're doing. And I think if you're going to be a good judge, you have to have that kind of sense.
Is there anything else you learned that influenced you as a judge?
Those of us who were in World War II had a special experience. And one of the things that I really found amazing is how men could work closely together to take care of each other, to leave nobody behind, and so forth. And I think that experience of dealing with total strangers from all over the United States has given me a feeling for my fellow human beings. And I attribute that to that experience of being in the military 27 months.
How would you compare military service with your service as a judge?
Well, I think a soldier is out there to protect our Constitution and protect our rights and punish people who don't protect our rights and our Constitution. And I think a judge must feel and do that every day. My duty is to the Constitution of the United States and the civil and due process rights of the people that appear before me. And I have to keep that in mind every day, all day.
What are your reasons for continuing to work on the bench?
I was asked by a reporter one day who came in to interview me, what's the most important case that you've worked on? And I patted a file in front of me, and he said, oh, what's it about? And I said, I don't know. I haven't started reading it yet. And he jumped up and he said, you're putting me on. And it was very red-faced. And I said, no, what I'm trying to point out to you is that everything that I learned up to last night, I want to put into working on this case to make myself a better judge and understand the law better. What I like about this and why I continue to work is I really like working in the legal field and trying my best to solve problems, to resolve disputes between people. And it's kind of fun to have that opportunity. So I'm a student for life.
Do you like the phrase, the greatest generation?
I like the phrase, but I would attribute it not just to people who were in the military, but all the people in the United States at that time. All the Rosie the Riveters who went out to work, and all the young ladies who went to the USO to make sandwiches and entertain soldiers, and all the parents who put gold stars in their windows, and when we came home, greeted us with such love. I think that was a good time to be an American.
What about your history gives you the greatest pride or satisfaction?
I guess I feel the greatest pride in fulfilling what people call the American dream. You know, I'm the grandson of a man who was chased out of Mexico by a murderous revolutionary. I'm the son of a father who had only 1 year of education, and yet I have had a experience getting a graduate degree. I have three children, one of whom is a judge, one of whom is a lawyer in Northern California, and the third is a psychologist. So this country has been wonderful to us, and so I feel like a very grateful dreamer.